Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have the pleasure of sharing a previous guest with you. He is Jim Giamatteo, the author of many books of varied genres, and that's how he likes it. He has books in the mystery genre, fantasy, science fiction, grammar, careers, animals, children's books, and children's grammar books. Also a book on how to survive a stroke, and one other titled Uneducated. And when he isn't writing, he's helping his wife take care of the animals on their sanctuary. And since our last conversation and our interview, he has written and published 20 books. So we have to find out how he's done this. So welcome back to the network, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Pat. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you with us as well. What a prolific writer, my friend, and with quite the health journey that we didn't talk about last time. So maybe, if you wouldn't mind, this journey of yours kind of helped ignite the fire to write some of your books. So perhaps share a bit of your health story with us.
Sure. So I was writing a few books, you know, kind of standard fare, maybe one or two mystery books a year. And then in early 2015, I had two heart attacks and two strokes, all within the first 2 weeks of February. So it wasn't a good month. Anyway, I spent about 4 months in the hospital, pretty much in, couldn't do anything. I couldn't talk, I couldn't walk, I couldn't do anything. They finally let me out, and with the help of therapy since then, I've been learning a lot. I've learned how to, it took me about a year, but I learned how to type again. Not as fast as before, but well enough. And I'm disabled, so I have all day to write. And so that's what I've been doing. I've been writing like 14, 15 hours a day. And it's worked well. I've written a ton of books, and I'm happy with it. So.
You know, I always am so proud of folks who have adversity in their lives and come out of it and continue to do something positive and make a difference, which you surely have done. My mom was in the hospital after a heart attack for 4 months, similar to you. So I know exactly the things that you go through, and you can't speak and you're intubated and you can't walk and all that must go on in your mind. Even though you're unable to move and to speak, it must be overpowering and overwhelming. So to get it out on paper, I'm sure, is very cathartic for you.
It was, Pat. In fact, probably one of the worst things was, I was thinking all of these thoughts and had all these ideas for stories or books to write, but I couldn't do anything about it. You know, my speech wasn't good enough to dictate. I couldn't type, so I was just sitting there with all of these thoughts gathering dust in my mind. So when I finally learned how to type again, it was a big relief.
Absolutely. It's like Jim Unleashed, right?
That's right.
I love it. Let's talk about your book, Surviving a Stroke. Has that been published yet?
Not yet. It's on pre-order. So it'll be out. It's pretty much done. It has to go through the final editing process, but it's in, it's being worked on now, and I have a couple beta readers looking at it, but so far, it looks pretty decent. I have one of my therapists doing a chapter in there too, so I'll add that to it before it's released.
Oh, I like that idea. Tell us about the writing of that. How did that feel for you to relive and then write it?
Well, I mean, fine. I mean, I'm just really hoping it helps other people, become motivated, or it teaches somebody else, things to do to help get through that struggle, because it is difficult. You know, when you lived a normal life and now all of a sudden you can't walk or you can't do things you did before, it takes some adjusting. And I think your attitude has a lot to do with that adjusting. You have to you know, you have to recognize that you're in a different place and you have to approach things differently.
Mm-hmm. It's a real bit of mental work, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the book Uneducated. I found that to be very interesting. What made you write that?
Well, it was easy. I worked for 30 plus years, you know, as a headhunter, basically looking for, you know, people, high-level people for companies. And one of the requirements, you know, on almost every job description was, you know, they had to have a certain degree, a bachelor's or a master's or a PhD or an MD. And 9 out of 10 times, it really wasn't necessary. I mean, you know, when you think about it, what is education? Education is learning. It's not a certificate from a school that says you learned, it's learning. So just because somebody has a certificate and somebody doesn't, you know, really it doesn't reflect what they can do. As a perfect example, that book goes into detail and shows how 33% of the world's billionaires do not have a degree. And almost everybody in the technology business doesn't. That's what was really surprising. You know, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the founder of Twitter, Michael Dell. You know, all of the big name people in computers and technology, most of them were dropouts. They left college to start a company. They never did get a degree. That does not mean they're not educated. It just means they don't have a paper that somebody says they're educated.
I think that's so important what you're saying. And as I'm thinking of when I was growing up, my parents said you have to have a college degree. As you grow up and spend time, you realize, I think even today, as you're saying, it no longer carries the weight that it used to.
Well, I agree. Well, what prompted me to write it, really, aside from the realities in working in that field, I do not have a degree myself. And it's because my wife and I were married very young, so we never got a degree. That doesn't mean I'm not educated. You know, it just means I don't have a certificate saying I'm educated. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to write that story, you know.
I'm glad you did. I think it's a conversation that needs to be had. So many young people feel like, well, yeah, I've got to go to college. And in reality, it's not for everyone. And as you say, you can be highly educated and not spend 4 years sitting in a classroom learning about things that either don't interest you or have no bearing on your future life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. So you published 20 books this past year. Share that process, as I'm sure some of the folks who are listening, some writers, have a difficult time writing just one.
Well, I think the bottom line is persistence. You know, most people will look at that number and say, oh, well, they must be trash. Well, they're not. I mean, just you can look at the reviews and see that most everybody likes them. They've all gotten excellent, you know, 4.7 or 4.8 or 4.9 reviews, you know, and that's not family and friends. Hell, I can't get my family and friends to read that much. But, you know, it's a matter of persistence. So in the past, before I had my strokes and heart attacks, you know, I would write maybe 2 or 3 hours a night. And I wouldn't do it every night. So, you know, doing it, going through that process, you know, you get X amount done, maybe 1 or 2 books a year. But now I'm writing all day long, all night long, and a lot more gets done. You know, it's, you know, like moving the mountain, the shovel full at a time. I mean, you may not, you know, type as quickly as you did before, and you may not do things, you know, as fast, but overall, you just type away and it gets done. You know, I mean, on one book, have a format an ebook. I think it was a publishing book. I wrote that in like 5 days, and you know, I had to send it out to beta readers and send it to the editor, and that took more time to get done than the actual writing. But you know, it gets done.
Well, I think your idea that you have the time, and if everyone had time, they could probably be more prolific. And I would also imagine the more you write, the more you want to write.
Yeah, and, you know, the more you find shortcuts or ways, you know, to beat the process, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of things you can do to help you along and to make things go smoother. And you, when you do it just a couple hours at a time, you don't think of those or you don't experience that. But when you do it all day, every day, you do find those things.
Mm-hmm. Any tips you could offer?
Well, my biggest, actually, I wrote a book about that too. It's called Writing Shortcuts. And it's, you know, using a text expansion app. So and the text expansion app actually keeps, you know, statistics for you. And according to that, last year I saved over 3 weeks of time just by using that. So, you know, instead of, like, for example, with so many books, you know, I have to know all of my ISBNs to constantly be, you know, putting those in for promotion or, you know, for distribution or whatever. And they're 13-digit numbers, so it's difficult to remember them. Mm-hmm. But with this expansion app, it's no problem. I know the ISBN for probably 100 different, you know, book formats I have. So you need a different one for digital, for print, for audio. But I know them all because I just use ISBN. Then I type ISBN, then the initials of the book, and then whether it's digital, print, or audio, and it spits out the number immediately. Mm-hmm. So within seconds, I can give you an ISBN number, a 13-digit number, for, you know, almost 100 different items.
Wow.
So that saves you an immense amount of time.
Oh, for sure, for sure. So you do offer many books on grammar and publishing, and that was one. What are some of the other titles?
Well, I have a whole series of grammar books for adults and now for children. I'm starting them. Mm-hmm. So there are five, and by the end of this year, there will be five grammar books for adults. And one of them, I'm pretty excited about, it's going to be one of the world's first ever visual grammar books. So it's a grammar book, you know, mostly geared toward students or English as second language students. But it uses pictures to talk about what you're trying to say. So there are several hundred pictures in the book. You know, I think that will help people learn. People like to learn. A lot of people are visual learners.
Give us an example.
You know, if you're trying to explain the difference between, aid and aid. So aid, like A-I-D. Like you're giving first aid, so you have a picture of a first aid kit or someone giving aid, you know, or an aid, A-I-D-E, you have a picture of a doctor's aid or a general's aid, and then aid, like lemonade, the drink, you have a picture of lemonade. So people can easily see the word and the picture next to it will explain to them immediately what you're talking about.
Oh, I love that, Jim, because there are so many folks that are visual. Often you read something, especially an explanation.
And then, yeah, and it doesn't click when you read it, but if you see it and read it, then it makes a difference.
Yeah. Oh, is that out already?
It's on pre-order now. Okay. It'll be out the end of September.
Excellent.
So it's the same as the Stroke book. It's going through final editing. It's already been beta read by about 10 people, and they really liked it. They had some good suggestions and a few words to add, but overall, and more importantly, it's not just misused words. It has a lot of misused words, but it's more than that. It's business redundancy. So in the business world especially, I think we are faced with tremendous amount of redundancies, and I hear it on TV, in the movies, you read it in books, things like, you know, an armed gunman. Well, if they have a gun, they are armed, you know. Yeah, or, you know, or an advanced warning. Well, a warning is in advance. You know, things like that. So, and you hear them all the time.
Yes.
You know? So there are several hundred of those examples, you know.
I like it. An unarmed gunman, that would be a person with no arms but with a gun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I look forward to digging into that book. That's fun. I'm probably a culprit on occasion. I'll have to start thinking
me
about
too.
That.
I think everybody is. You learn it. You pick it up as you learn, but there's no reason you can't unlearn it, so to speak. Or look, you know, my favorite and one I'm terribly guilty of is tuna fish. Well, a tuna is a fish.
Oh.
So of course it's tuna fish. You know, it should be just tuna.
Don't
say I'm having a tuna fish sandwich. You're having a tuna sandwich. You know, just like that would be like saying I'd like a chicken fowl sandwich, you know.
I'll have a cow steak.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just as guilty as everybody else in that department. I'm trying to teach myself not to be, but you know, when I stumbled across that, I had to laugh.
Oh my gosh, we're having too much fun here, Jim. I love you.
That is right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the thing I'm most excited about, well, kids and animals get me super excited, but my wife and I have an animal sanctuary we've had for 24 years. And so I keep hearing my two little grandkids, you know, as they grow, they have a lot of grammar problems. And I thought, well, what's the best way to teach them? So I wrote a series of books called No Mistakes Grammar for Kids. And I used the animals on the farm to kind of teach the lessons. And I think it works well. You know, I've had first, second, and third graders read it, and they liked it, you know.
Oh, wow. I love all of the work you're doing. It's so varied, but so important.
Well, that's the other thing. I think the variations, you know, help when you're writing. So if I'm writing a mystery and I kind of get stuck or bored or say, where should I go with this? I just switch and start writing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go back to that mystery later, you know.
I like it. Now, as an animal person, I have 11 cats that I've rescued. And since I last spoke with you, I have a new radio show called 11 Cats Radio. So,
good for you, Pat.
Trying to be an advocate. How's that? For animals. Anyway, I always love seeing your book, Whiskers and the Bear, on Twitter. You have lots of animals. So give us a peek into your animal life and that book, Whiskers and the Bear.
Well, it's easy. About 24 years ago, my wife somehow ran across a potbelly pig that needed a home. And she asked me about it. I thought, what the hell do I want a pig for? You know, but we decided to get it, and we just fell in love with this thing. And I swear, Pat, you could almost see how grateful that pig was, you know, for having a nice home. So we decided to start rescuing animals, which meant, of course, getting, you know, a place with property and, you know, enough room to do so. Well, we ended up having the most we were up to was 55 animals. I think we're down to about 38 now. But, you know, at one time we had 55 animals, and they were pretty much everything. We had 15 dogs, we had pigs, we had a horse, we had cats, and we even had a crazy wild boar, which we still have. He's a giant. I mean, it's crazy.
Is that Dennis?
Dennis, yeah. I use his picture in most all of my books and social media. He's nuts. He's my buddy.
So all of that prompted you to write the book?
All of that, getting back to the story. So all of these animal experiences, I mean, they're actually amazing, as everybody knows. Animals are pretty cool. But we had two dogs that were just nuts. You know, they were pretty much wild. They They occasionally parked themselves here, is my way of saying it, but they were really just along to the woods. And I wrote a story about them. It was a true story, and it tells the tale of how we rescued them and how they lived their life, and it was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as anyone who has an animal knows, they are a very special relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, let's go to your formatting, because you said you had to learn your own formatting because the person you were using couldn't keep up with what you were doing. So now you format your own books. How does that go?
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy it happened that way. Things always happen for a reason, right?
Yes.
And so I was writing all of these books, and the formatter I had was very good. I was very happy with him, but he just couldn't keep up. You know, so I decided, well, maybe I can learn how to do it myself. And then somebody told me about a program called Vellum, V-E-L-L-U-M. And it may be the simplest way to format a book, and it makes it so easy to add pictures and things. And now, unfortunately, it's only for Mac, not PCs. But using Vellum, I have now switched to formatting all of my own books. So I do everything myself.
That's a good feeling when you have that capability, because then you're in control and you're in charge and you don't have to wait for someone else.
Even more importantly, I wrote a couple of blogs about it afterwards. Perhaps the most important thing for me was, you know, if I put out a book and somebody says, hey, you know, something's wrong, you misspelled a word, which won't happen because I run that all through thing, or, you know, this is wrong, or like in one of my books, I mentioned a subway stop. Well, you know, that he went down into the subway, the killer did. Well, somebody wrote me and said, that particular subway stop is one of the only ones that's above ground, and it was up in Brooklyn.
Oh.
Well, I was embarrassed as could be, and I didn't want to leave that, so I reformatted the book to include that. And it only, you know, took me a couple hours and it was done. It was, the new version was back up that night. Now, if I'd have had to wait for a formatter to do that, it may have been a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And it would have cost me, you know, $40 or $50. And instead, I did it in a couple of hours and it cost me nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you probably felt like hiding when that was brought to your attention.
Because it's really nice if you know a particular area, you know, like if you're from Brooklyn and you're reading about a book that's about Brooklyn, and all of a sudden they mention something wrong, like a restaurant that isn't there or a subway stop that's above ground instead of below. Well, you don't want that to happen.
Mm-mm.
So you want to make it right.
Right, right. Great. See, that makes sense. Vellum for Mac only. I wonder if there's another system out there for a Windows PC.
Well, there probably is. Mm-hmm. You could actually, you know, you could make adjustments and use Vellum for a PC, but you'd have to use something like, you know, a simulation program like a Mac in the cloud or something.
Right.
Which isn't bad.
Right, okay.
But, you know, certainly not the native way to do
no.
it. But you could, I know some people who've done it that way.
Okay. Now, what about your cover art?
My cover art, I have a lady who does that who's fantastic. I mean, she's amazing. And she can, you know, like for my Animal Sanctuary books, I'll send her pictures and she will find other backgrounds and things and mix them all together and make them look good.
Mm-hmm. And then your publishing process.
You know, I used to go direct with almost everybody. But lately I've been using a distributor called Pronoun for my digital books. And they distribute it to all of the major ones in the U.S., you know, Amazon, Apple, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Google. And then I use a few others to go internationally. For the print books, I use both Ingram and CreateSpace.
Okay.
Because that's the best way to go.
Okay, good advice. talking about advice, I see you on social media all the time. Give us some advice on using social media to promote books.
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, don't spend too much time, you know, because that's time you could use writing. Understand that it's probably not going to sell many books, so don't spend too much time. You know, don't consistently tout your book. It's okay to mention that you're releasing a book or, you know, stuff like that, but don't shout, buy my book all the time like too many people do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're better off if you just talk about something else and get people interested in you mm-hmm. or what you do, and then if they like that, maybe they'll look up your book.
No, that's a great idea. I agree. So many people do just kind of in your face with their book cover all of the time, when really you've got to offer something. You've got to give people something of value before you can expect them to do business with you. Do you have any other outlets that you would suggest to writers as far as promotion?
Well, it depends upon what kind of books you have. Like, for example, on LinkedIn is primarily a business media outlet, and I've been on there for years. So, but it's not where you'd, you know, expect to get people to buy your mystery books or your sci-fi books. But my books on careers, I mean, that's a natural place for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you don't, again, same thing, you don't say, you know, buy my book, but you might write an article about, you know, how to write a resume or what are the things you don't do in an interview. And, you know, and then if they go to your website and they see other articles that are interesting, maybe they will pick up your book.
Exactly. So
actually, LinkedIn has been the biggest source of my sales for the career books of anything.
Interesting. Okay. Very interesting. That's good to know. Offer something of value so people get to know you and appreciate you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. Like on my, you know, I have 4 different websites, and on my website for careers, I have a lot of articles on what to do for resumes or interviews or, you know, what not to do and stuff like that. So, you know, you can go there and get a lot of advice, but you can also, you know, buy the books there too. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do buy the books. And a lot of people don't. That's fine, you know.
Yep. Well, as a prior headhunter, you obviously know what you're talking about when it comes to careers and resumes and what people should be doing and what to look out for. So you are a great resource there. Now, out of all the books that you've written, do you have a favorite where you just say, yep, I liked writing that. That's my best one.
Well, I don't know about the best one. The favorite, well, the one I enjoyed writing the most was probably the Whiskers and Bear book about the animals. But that's because my heart was in it. You know, I really love those dogs. I mean, if I had to pick a book that was my favorite, you know, and I say, it would probably be the very first book I ever wrote, Murder Six Time.
Oh.
I think that's a good book. It's a little gruesome, but it's pretty good.
What's the title?
Murder Takes Time.
Murder Takes Time. All righty. Wow, so much to know. So as we begin to wrap up, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to talk about today?
Well, not really. Just, you know, I think I'm going to continue with a few more books about the sanctuary, about the animals on the sanctuary, because I think people, you know, are interested in animals and like to read about them. But I'm also going to continue very much with the kids' books and grammar. I've already, you know, gotten some pretty good response from people. You know, one of them was a teacher who teaches second grade, and she read a few of the books to her kids. These aren't, you know, published yet, but they were in beta form, and they loved them, you know. So anytime, if I can help a kid especially, it really gives you a good feeling.
Mm-hmm. As you were saying that, I was thinking about homeschools and homeschoolers and homeschool organizations.
I don't know how to market to that area, but that would be ideal, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just interviewed someone who is doing a book on Alaska series. She lives in Alaska, and she's doing a lot with the homeschool group. So, yeah, might be something.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to figure out how to get into that market because I think it would be a good market because, as you know, getting into a real school is nearly impossible unless you get approved by the education board, et cetera. But a homeschool market would be different.
Absolutely. Or even preschools or daycares and those kind of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Oh, I'm thinking of marketing ideas for you, Jim.
There you go, Pat.
You got my wheels turning. Well, listen, where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
Well, you can buy the books on, you know, any of the major retailers, Amazon, Apple, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Google, and more. As far as my sites, I have several websites. The easiest one is murdertakestime.com. This is my writing site. And nomistakespublishing.com is my publishing and grammar site.
Okay, murdertakestime.com and nomistakespublishing.com, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. Jim, what a pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you so much for sharing you and all of your tips with us.
Thanks, Pat.